It's day 18 of the partial government shutdown. 420,000 federal employees are working without pay. An additional 380,000 workers have been forced to stay home. And if the shutdown extends into the weekend, it will be the longest-running government shutdown in American history. But we've been here before. It all dates back to 1974 and the passage of the Congressional Budget Act. That's when the Congressional Budget Office was established, and the president and Congress had to work together to avoid funding gaps. And sometimes that didn't happen, which led to shutting down the government. Since 1974, there have been 21 shutdowns, including the one we're in today. This time around, 47% of American adults hold President Trump responsible for the freeze, while 33% say Democrats are to blame. That's according to a poll from Reuters and Ipsos conducted at the end of last month. And some of you say they're just blips on the political landscape.
This is Bill from Seattle. The shutdown does not impact my vote. And I was in the military for several past shutdowns, and it's never been more than an inconvenience for me or my family.
This is Laura calling from Hanson, Mass. The federal government shutdowns have never had an impact on my vote. This is primarily because I usually cannot remember who caused the shutdowns and why they caused the shutdown after it's over. But maybe if it was brought up at election time, it might change my mind.
Others of you remember these stalemates on election day.
I remember in the 1970s that my spouse and I were without pay for 3 days when the government shut down, and we were stationed in Germany with the military. I definitely held the government, including Jimmy Carter, responsible for that.
This is Tucker Ranson from New York City. I think that shutdowns are irresponsible, and I vote accordingly.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Let's get started. To find out more about the history of shutdowns as a strategy, I'm joined by Roy Myers, professor of political science and affiliate professor of public policy at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Welcome to the show, Roy.
Good to be here.
So we mentioned that Congress has only had the power to shut down the government since 1974. But did the government shutdowns look the same back then as they do today?
Well, in 1974, that's when it enacted the Congressional Budget Act. The most important historical action that led to shutdowns was a decision by the Attorney General Benjamin Civiletti in 1980, who said that when there was a funding gap, that is, when Congress and the president didn't agree to an appropriation bill on time, then agencies that lacked that funding would have to shut down. And after that, during the Reagan years, there were 8 short shutdowns. It lasted at most 3 days. And then there was a short one during the George H.W. Bush shutdown presidency, where he, in effect, told Republicans to vote for the tax increases that helped reduce the deficit in the agreement with the Democrats.
One of the longest shutdowns, as you know, was sort of a showdown, if you will, between President Clinton and the then House Speaker Newt Gingrich. And during that shutdown, we heard Newt Gingrich take a pretty bold stance. Here's how he described it.
To the best of my knowledge, I can tell you without equivocation, no one has talked to me today about any so-called revolt. I just left 60 of the freshmen who are very happy with what we're doing. We've had, I think, 7 hours of leadership meetings in the last 2 days.
What was Gingrich's political strategy there?
Well, Gingrich had won a big election victory in 1994. The Republicans took over control of Congress, and they decided that they were going to impose on President Clinton the Republican vision of what should happen to the U.S. government, which was to shrink its spending. So they were insisting that President Clinton sign appropriations bills that would provide far less funding than President Clinton wanted. So they had an impasse in their negotiations. And so Gingrich and the Republicans decided to, in effect, use the funding gap to shut down government agencies and call Clinton's hand. What they failed to realize it was that President Clinton was a very wily negotiator, and in particular, he was very good at connecting with the public, repeating incessantly that Republicans were attacking what he called MMEE, which stood for Medicare, Medicaid, Education, and the Environment. And President Clinton convinced the public that he was right and the Republicans were wrong, and the Republicans eventually caved and compromised on their own. It did lead to some spending cuts, but far smaller spending cuts than Gingrich wanted.
As you're describing this, one of the things that I'm wondering, and I think we're hearing some folks asking these questions, is these shutdowns have become, at least they feel like they've become political games of chicken, where really not much is getting done. Have shutdowns become a political tool?
They very, very much are games of chicken. Whether they're a sensible political tool is a good question, because I'm not familiar with any games of chicken that end up well. And in this particular case, I believe that the proponents of the shutdown will hurt their political reputation, just like it hurt the Republicans in 1995 and 96, and then again in 2013 when another long shutdown took place.
We know in this shutdown, President Trump initially said he would take responsibility for it. He's had a lot of bluster around his positioning on this shutdown. But some of the blame is going to Democrats. And what's the strategy here in terms of blaming your opponents during a shutdown?
Well, in part, that's because a lot of Americans engage in what is called partisan-motivated reasoning. That is, they tend to take information from the politicians they support and particularly accept blame being cast on the politicians that they oppose. So many Republicans will listen to President Trump and blame the Democrats, and many Democrats will listen to the Democratic leaders and blame President Trump. However, there are a number of people that don't rely solely on that partisan-motivated reasoning, and in this particular case, as you said at the beginning, the polls seem to show that President Trump is going to be blamed more for this than the Democrats. And that's quite understandable, because in that press availability before the shutdown, President Trump willingly accepted blame before the fact.
President Obama also oversaw a 10-day shutdown in 2013. Let's take a listen to his approach on how to deal with that.
The only thing we can't do is to engage in an extortion game where you threaten to shut down the government, hurt a lot of people, or ultimately hurt the entire U.S. economy.
Roy, are we in that moment right now in this extortion game?
I believe that some of the Republican leadership believes that that would be successful, in particular the acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, a former member of Congress from South Carolina, and the OMB director repeatedly has said during his service in Congress that he thought a shutdown would be a useful way of shrinking government. And his colleague in Congress, Mark Meadows, who's head of the Freedom Caucus, has said the same thing. However, you know, if you're going to extort somebody, you want to have something that they really want to have. And the Republicans are not in that position, because many Americans have come to understand that a shutdown deprives them of important government services. And when we get to the point when, for example, if this were to continue into February, when people lose food stamp funding or other main benefits that are administered by people who in the government would no longer be working, that's going to be a real problem for the Republicans.
Also, you know, the president has also said that he's spoken to federal employees who have, despite their concerns about not getting paid, are still supportive of the shutdown. Whether or not that's true, Roy, can you give us a sense for how long that level of support, that partisan political support, will last while people are not getting paid? I mean, isn't there a limitation to how much people will support any administration when their pockets are empty?
Yes, it will erode steadily, but particularly when, say, for example, federal workers don't receive their paychecks as they are due at the end of this week. Now, there are probably some people, such as some Border Patrol agents, who have allied themselves with the president regarding funding for, quote, the wall, end quote. But I think that's a relatively small percentage of federal civil servants. Most federal civil servants are very interested in serving the American public, regardless of who is controlling the government as elected officials, and they want to be at work and they want to be paid for serving the public.
How long? I mean, we've got a couple of, there are about 30 seconds left. Are you expecting this to make any moves, this shutdown, to actually continue into the weekend?
Yes, it's going to have to continue through the weekend, because Congress will not be able to pass bills very quickly, even if the president declares an emergency, as he's been threatening to do tonight. That, in fact, if he does that, will be a massive political challenge to the Congress. And if President Trump thinks he's going to get out of this situation by going that route, I think he's sorely mistaken.
Roy Myers is a professor of political science at the University of Maryland. Thank you so much, Roy.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.